Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the Mike Force Podcast. It is, of course, your host, Mike G. Want to get this content out to you, developing in Afghanistan. But before we get to the current events, let's talk about some of the valuable partners and sponsors that sponsor this podcast and make it all possible. The first one is 10,000. Look, 10,000 is a short company that's making cool apparel and swag that's good for your lifestyle, especially if you're living that active lifestyle. Look, I like active lifestyles, but I also like wearing the right equipment for the activity. I grew up in Ranger panties, a decade in Ranger panties. Not a lot of attention paid in detail to service members, military, physical fitness uniforms. And so as a civilian, one of the best companies I've found in this space is 10,000.cc. That's 10,000 spelled out .cc. I've been wearing their 7-inch tactical short. It's a combination of durability, mobility, versatility, all the things that you need without the chafe. Man, I wear their shorts because it has the liner. I'm actually wearing them right now. I work out in them. I do events in them. It's an everyday kind of short, but also allows you to ruck, run, swim, all the activity that you need. It was developed and assessed and evaluated by 50 special ops members who put it to the ringer. Swimming, lifting, all that good stuff. And Navy EOD, Marine Raiders, Green Berets like myself, Army Rangers, all these guys were part of this testing and evaluation to make it its best. If you guys go to 10,000.cc and use the Mike Force coupon code, again, it's 10,000.cc, and enter Mike Force, you'll get 15% off your first purchase. That's a big deal. 15% off your first purchase using Mike Force, again, at 10,000.cc. Also, this podcast is sponsored by athleticgreens.com. Look, Athletic Greens combines 75 vitamins, minerals. They're on something like their 50-something-ish recipe of this, always upgrading and developing a new and better formula. I use it to break my fast every single day. I fast 16 to 20 hours. I break my fast, and I do it the right way. If you guys are interested, you guys can go to athleticgreens.com/MikeForce. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/MikeForce, and you can get a free year supply of vitamin D as well as 5 travel packs. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/MikeForce. Guys, important things that are happening in Afghanistan. Right now, I think the total killed in action is up to 12, and it might increase. I wanted to hit you up with some current events and talk about this situation unfolding. I even put one of my guest podcasts on the back burner because I think it's important to talk about these events that are unfolding that have to do with our level of preparedness and also our national security. So here we go. All right, so today we're talking about the circumstance in Afghanistan and kind of the things and how they're unfolding and how it relates to your level of preparedness, whether it's thinking about these things national security wise or even your vote. It's good to be informed. Like I'm reading right now on Instagram Live that 4 Marines were just killed. So here's what I know about the current administration and the incompetence. They're going to write it off, because just recently in the discussion, when asked by a news reporter about the circumstance, it was like, it was 4 days ago. Does that matter now? Similarly to when I worked for the Secretary of State, then Hillary Clinton, regarding Benghazi, where what difference does it make now? You know, it's like, what? We're talking about human lives, and right now we're talking about American lives lost. Look, I don't ever want to be a political voice on a soapbox for all of the things that are happening. But what I won't do is ignore the incompetence by politicians that are getting people killed, right? This is bigger than Benghazi. This is like Benghazi times 100. And I'll outline in context why that is, because I want to explain in detail. I don't want to just get emotional here. I don't want to talk about things that I don't have a grasp or understanding of. Let me first off start off this podcast and bring you back a little bit in history. I happen to be Korean American, Asian American. I'm American first, but I happen to be half Korean. Let me talk to you a little bit about my history. During World War II, from 1941 to 1945, the war was ended with Japan when we dropped two atomic bombs on Japan. Hiroshima and Nagasaki, we ended that war. Prior to that, Japan had invaded Korea, and Korea's always been in this strategic peninsula that has been taken advantage of by the Chinese, the Russians, by communists, as well as the North Koreans. So this is important in context because I want you to understand the complexity has it, of how it relates to what's going on in Afghanistan. So after World War II, we went, well, what are we going to do with this country called Korea? Because they had invaded Korea, and now we have this. And what was happening was this battle over terrain. You had superpowers like Russia. You had superpowers like China. And you had superpowers like America negotiating in a way, but telling them in a way that we're going to take Korea. So what we had was communist China and Russia battling out with South Korea, more of the moderates, and we took over Korea. But we had to fight for it. From 1950 to 1953, 3 million people were killed in the Korean War, including, last time, if I could recall, over 60,000 Americans. And we fought. But what did we do? Well, we drew a line on the 38th parallel and the demilitarized zone, and we said, we are going to keep this part safe and sovereign. And then the communists of China and Russia, they could do whatever they do. And it's like, how does that work out for you? How does Marxist ideology work out for you? How does communism work out for you? We could see the remnants of it in China, Russia, and the worst case scenario of a compartmentalized version of that in North Korea. And the question is, Mike, well, how does this matter? Well, it matters because the Taliban came out of this political, military type issue. You see, in Afghanistan in the 60s and 70s, when it had a monarchy, there was sovereignty. There were women rights. The children can go to school. And then there was a communist takeover by the Russians. And then there was the Taliban that derived from this war that was fought between the Afghans and Russians. In fact, there's a lot of information out there, but one good documentary that makes the case that the Taliban are all the disaffected orphans from that war that sought refuge in Pakistan. Also in that war, a player came out of it called Osama bin Laden that started training, that started fighting, that started bringing his allocation of resources and treasure to help stand up what later became Al-Qaeda. So in the 90s, in 1994, the Taliban rise up against Kabul. In fact, the civil war was fought in Kabul against the Mujahideen. So the Mujahideen were seen as the freedom fighters, the more moderates who didn't want to contest their people and wanted a prideful state, an Afghan state. And then you had the Taliban that wanted an Islamic state. And now they're all fighting for the same real estate, except then you had the communist. So then what had to happen was negotiations with the Taliban. So what came out of that was something called September 11th of 2001. 19 terrorists, mostly Saudis, backed by a lot of treasure out of Saudi, trained in Afghanistan and Pakistan, commit the biggest act of violence, the biggest act of terrorism in modern history. They killed thousands of Americans in four airplanes with 19 box cutters. Now, Mike, how does that relate today? Well, here's how it relates today and to you. Political powers that be are embedded with the Chinese and the Russians. I am not a conspiracy theorist. This is what I know for a fact. So right now, the Taliban have negotiated deals with the Chinese. When I was fighting wars, proxy wars and actual wars all over the world, something that I always recognized was the access and placement the Chinese had. While we were fighting wars, they were embedded everywhere, developing infrastructure, building buildings, including hotels, mining resources. Why? Because they have to facilitate the billions of Chinese and their force modernization. If you go to SHOT Show, there's a thing that happens there with the Chinese, where the Chinese go there and they take pictures of everything on the displays. They try to get different angles of those things because they want to increase their technology, because that's how they're advancing. So then when you look at the incompetence that's taking place right now within our administration, specifically related to Afghanistan, and there's many more cases of this, I ask myself the question, why are we not more involved? One, why are we not fighting side by side the Afghans? I've heard the case being made, the Afghans should fight for themselves, and I'm in agreeance. But the Afghans, because of the tribal regions that exist and the austere environment and terrain that exist in Afghanistan, cannot do it alone. They don't have the close air support. They don't have the infrastructure and power that we bring to bear. So when we unplugged from Afghanistan, we left them vulnerable. And it's not very difficult, even if you're a small band of Afghan Taliban with AK-47s, to take over a province, a region. There were people who fought, by the way. Unreported, because it didn't fit the narrative, there were Afghans all over the country that were fighting, that refused to give up their arms. But top-down leadership failed, and it fell apart. So relating it back to Korea, what did we do at the end of the Korean War in 1953? We set a demilitarized zone, and we stayed. 25 to 30,000 is the estimate of American troops that are still in South Korea. I am a product of the Korean War. My mom is Korean, and my dad is American. He was an American service member that met my mother in Korea. So when we look at the displacement of ourselves, if it's not strategically beneficial, then we usually pull out. But think about the strategy here with Afghanistan. You have one of the largest and richest uranium and lithium mineral deposits in the world. And there's many more, by the way, including gold. You have access and placement to terrain bordered with essentially China, the stands, and then China, in the middle of the Middle East, to be able to react and respond if something happened. And we retain eyes and ears on the ground to be able to intel and information collect, which is key. So let me walk you through what's happening now because of our incompetence. And again, this isn't emotional. This is me using my 20 years of strategic and tactical counterterrorism experience and then making sense of the world around us. You have us pulling out. I'm assuming that politically was because we wanted to negotiate with the Chinese. The Chinese and the Russians, through the Afghans, are living a proxy war. We are in the Cold War right now. This is not a tactical war against a radical Islamic ideology. This is a proxy war against the Chinese and the Russians. So when we say we're going to pull all forces out, I go, interesting. Why would we ever do that militarily? Well, if you've negotiated in the back room with a Chinese who's in bed with the Taliban, then you wouldn't do that because you would get sanctions, you would lose all of your diversified portfolio, and then what do you get? You get support for the Chinese, which Biden is doing right now. He's supporting the Chinese more than any president in my lifetime. And I'm going, well, wow. Well, why would LeBron James, why would the NBA, why would President Biden and all of his cronies decide to support the Chinese? Well, they have vested interest in Chinese, including their own treasure. So when we make political decisions that make no military sense, and you have every military commander from the bottom up telling you, what are you doing? You get the same thing that happened in Benghazi. When I was in Benghazi, when I was in Libya, I was there in October of 2012. Me and George Bell ran a counterterrorism program called a 1208, a congressionally mandated counterterrorism program. Oh, by the way, we were running that program prior to September 11th of 2012 happening, meaning we knew all the information intel was going to lead to attacks because they were already happening. Coalition forces there in Benghazi and Libya were getting attacked. So when I was there, I wasn't tasked with it. U.S. Army Special Operations Command members were tasked with it. They rapidly found those responsible for the attacks in Benghazi. I could say his name now because he's in Gitmo right now. Under the Biden administration, he might be free. His name is Abu Qatala. He was responsible for planning and coordinating the attacks on September 11th, 9/11, that took the lives of our ambassador, a analyst, and two GRS employees of the Central Intelligence Agency. So when I was there, we understood where they were, and then we got enough fidelity to conduct a counterterrorism operation. I was the bilat option, meaning I was the Libyan face of the option in the courses of action that were proposed. Except nobody in the politics of it would allow us to do our job. Huh. So you have operators on the ground in special operations that are responsible for counterterrorism operations across the globe that aren't allowed to capture and kill terrorists that just killed four citizens, including the ambassador, and we can't do it. Why? Political, military incompetence. Why? I look back on that whole circumstance unfolding, and it was because the political agenda, the personal agenda was different than saving people's lives, holding those responsible. So now we're reliving this. Let's get back to the point. We are reliving this in real time, except this has been Benghazi times 100. So when you unfold a counterterrorism debacle like this, what the worst case scenario is, what we call in the military, the most dangerous course of action is unfolding before our eyes. Therein lies an issue when you bring people together and isolate them on a base that is Kabul airfield. I know that there's people going in and out and doing roving patrols because I know my guys. I don't know this. This isn't classified, but I know my guys. They're going to be fighting to get out and extracting American citizens. Not rescuing, extracting. We are behind enemy lines in Kabul right now because the political decisions that were made allowed us to only have one airfield in Kabul. We don't have Bagram. We don't have Kandahar. We don't have any bases. We started giving up the real estate and pulling and unplugging as it was collapsing. And now we're in a small isolated base in Kabul airfield. Now, four Marines were just killed in action and several others wounded, including civilians that were killed. And God bless their souls. Thank God for the American service member for picking up the slack that these idiots make in the White House and the administration. God bless those dudes. And I pray right now for their safety because I'm worried about them. So now when you're sitting looking at this unfold, you realize, well, wow, what happens if Americans can no longer reach the gate? You better believe that that attack was Al-Qaeda and ISIS affiliated. The Taliban don't conduct suicide attacks. It's very rare. So whoever that was, as the media is labeling it as a comprehensive attack or, you know, a deliberate attack, that this was more complex. They're labeling it complex, which just means there was small arms in conjunction with IEDs or explosives. From what I understand, it was a suicide vest. That means we're going to shut down the gates because politically, no one has the spine to conduct or reconduct what we should have did a long time ago, like 2 weeks ago. I say long time, like 2 weeks ago. The reorganization of military forces and taking terrain. Because we should have taken out, we should have looked at Kabul and we should have said, hey, this is the rings that we need to evaluate and start taking back control. We should have set a perimeter, which would have been containment. And we should have said, Taliban, if you're in this ring, we will hunt and kill you. You have 24 hours to get all of your guys and get them on the outskirts of this ring because we need to protect our people. But that never happened. And it still won't happen, which is leading me to the understanding of what the worst case will be. The largest hostage rescue debacle in American history. I say debacle not because I don't have confidence in our guys, because they're the best. But what happens when you take the National Mission Force, the counterterrorism units that are responsible for hostage rescue, this is all open source, by the way, and you allow them to do their job? Well, there's not enough operators in the world in this country to be able to do all of this at once. No offense to the 82nd Airborne Division, but they're not trained to conduct hostage rescue, which includes the standard operating procedures, the training, the funding, the logistical assets, and the tactical aptitude on target to be able to discriminate targets and to do what they do best. And they're the best at it. But there's not enough. Not only is there not enough, but we don't have the intel and information collection apparatus on the ground to identify where people are. And I love the Secretary of State, right? He comes out of the woodwork and he's like, we've informed this. The State Department has informed every single American. Every single American. We have done that. We have, his words, communication with every American. Do you? Because communication is reciprocating conversation. It's not one-way emails that go to your spam folder. It's not one-way emails that go to your box that you can't check because you don't have a GSM network or infrastructure. So we're focused on Kabul, but I want you to remember that there are American citizens and Afghan partners all over the country of Afghanistan, including remote bases. So as this started to unfold, can you imagine somebody who's in Bagram? Can you imagine somebody who's in Mazar-e Sharif or Kunduz, who now is consolidated behind enemy lines now and trying to make movement to Kabul? Because that's the last place that we're going to operate and we're going to give up everything else. Well, how do you get yourself out of Kabul? What if you didn't make it there? So now how many American citizens are in the entire country behind enemy lines not able to get out? We don't know. The Secretary of Defense, State, National Security Director doesn't know. So now what we have is a combatant crisis. We have Central Command trying to pull it out of their ass, trying to make things happen. We have operators on the ground who already have the tactical plan. We have a breakdown in information and intelligence. And now we have political positions of power driving directives down to the tactical level that are going to stop those men from doing their job. Here's the only thing that could stop this. A complete retake over Afghanistan. Yes. Yep. Yeah. That's not emotional. That's an understanding of military decision-making processes and our history. The only way to stop this right now and to get our people back is to take back over all the terrain that we've given up. Yes, a reinvasion of Afghanistan. Because now that you have the Taliban embedded in every major town and tribe in the entire country, including Kabul, how do you get your people back? Well, you have to take it back over. Now we're back to the worst case scenario. If you're ISIS, if you're Al-Qaeda and you're the Taliban and you're smart, what are you doing? You're taking and collecting all the Afghan partners and all the American citizens that you have and you're consolidating them. You're not executing them. You're not executing them. You're consolidating them. Why? Because you need leverage. You need to be able to identify at a later time a point of leverage where you could take these American citizens and use them as tokens, as pawns in this war. And that's what's going to happen. Because they're not dumb. They're dumb. But they're not dumb strategically. They're going to take these people and consolidate them all over the country. And then how do you rescue them? The answer is you don't. Because you have to negotiate now. If you don't, they'll be murdered. The difference between us and radical ideology, and I'm speaking specifically about Biden, is that Biden's fighting and making decisions from a point of ego. He's very egotistical, which means he's making decisions based on ego and emotion and not common sense, logic, or even patriotism. So if you have a radical ideologist who believes in everything he reads in the Quran, and he says, if you don't do what I ask you, I'm going to kill them, do you think they care about their lives? No. They have 72 virgins to meet on the other side. They're not worried. I've fought and I've killed many of these guys. They're not worried. So how does this unfold right now? Likely right now, politically, just based on the trend, the pattern of life, the administration is telling them to lock down. Emails have been sent, and this is me, again, my opinion. This isn't fact until I confirm it. The Secretary of State has likely contacted all American citizens through their one-way email to not come to Kabul airbase, because if they do, they will likely be killed. But you would rather them stay at home behind enemy lines and then not come to the airbase. Yes, that's what's going to happen. Because if they come to the airbase, there's a risk of a suicide attack by Al-Qaeda and ISIS. Oh, by the way, a week ago, according to President Biden, did not exist in Afghanistan. The Pentagon had to retract that statement and say, you do realize that that did exist. So how does this unfold in the near term? There's a couple options. One is they allow the men that are there already to go do their job. They negotiate with the Taliban because that's the only way they're going to be able to do it without killing more citizens. Look, can you imagine you're a counterterrorism unit and you're designated to go rescue a person? They go to rescue the person, and then Taliban with their guns, their now 240 machine guns, and now their night vision goggles are in the way. Well, guess what's going to happen? It's not going to work out and fare well for the Taliban. But how does that make you meet your strategic and tactical objective in rescuing the citizens? It's not likely that you will. So what is going to happen is a negotiation with the Taliban via the channels that have already been established by the director of the CIA and Biden. They will have to negotiate that they go and access all their civilians. And I would not be surprised if the Taliban says, that's fine, go get your guys, except for what just happened today. What happened today is ISIS affiliates and Al-Qaeda affiliates basically said, go screw yourself. Here's the issue with us, and here's the issue with this administration. We think that we're fighting a war that has a timeline. Radical ideology doesn't take a break. They're in this. If they're breathing and living, they're in war with us, the infidel. They have no timeline, and they don't care about women, about children, about human lives, and they will fight until they're dead. So when you fight that radical ideology, it's hard tactically to negotiate with those type of terrorists. So yeah, we might negotiate a ceasefire agreement or whatever that is and go out into the hinterlands to rescue our people. But guess what's going to happen? War is going to happen. Combat's going to happen. Self-defense is going to happen. People dying is what's going to happen. If the men on the ground don't have close air support, the rules of engagement necessary to do the job, they will be the casualties of this war. They will be the casualties of these mistakes. Now we have 4 Marines killed because of incompetence. Killed because of incompetence. And now here's what I want you to look for in the news. I want you to look in the news and look for the statements that are released where they blow smoke up your ass and they say, yeah, we regret these decisions and they're backtracking and we feel bad, and you know, we're going to make sure we hold up and we need to stick to our timeline. Our original timeline is days away. 31 August is that timeline. 31 August is that timeline. Who wants to make a bet that we stick to that timeline and extract with our tails tucked between our legs? Not the American service member, but the politicians who are making these mistakes. Lastly, let me go over long-term worst case scenario, most dangerous course of action in the future. One, do we have a vetting process for the people that we're bringing in? I love Afghans. I do. I love any disaffected people who are trying to get freedom. But how are we vetting these people? If we're infiltrating them into our country, how are we vetting them? I'm not anti-immigration because I come from an immigrant. What I am is national security driven. I want us to focus on our security. If I'm Al-Qaeda, if I'm ISIS, even if I'm Taliban, I am going, this is an opportunity for us to infiltrate into this country to fight our war and implement our radical ideology. That's what I'm doing. It's already happening across America, by the way. The embedded professors with Marxist ideology is what that is, that are teaching your kids. I don't want to go down a rabbit hole, but that's what this is. It happened in Korea. It happened in World War II. It's happening right now. 2 to 3 generations deep, Marxist ideology is changing our culture, which is going to lead us to being where they are in the near future. So, worst case scenario is we develop a safe haven all over again for terrorism, except on steroids. If you haven't seen the headlines, the Chinese just paid out millions and billions and will eventually be trillions of dollars for everything that exists in Afghanistan that they're mining out. You think the Chinese are interested in pulling out resources? Answer is yes. You think the Taliban cares about the lithium and uranium that's going to be used and sold to Tesla? The answer is hell no. They want their 72 virgins. They want the fight. They want Islamic Sharia law. That's what they want. So it becomes a safe haven. And what do we get? We get another 9/11. We get another attack on the homeland because now we've lost all eyes and ears on the ground. That's problematic, people. I want to say and point fingers and blame the politicians. But the buck stops with us. We voted these guys in. I didn't personally do it, but Americans did this. It's because at the top and at the very bottom, what we are doing, what the enemy is doing, is changing American culture and history to take this place over. They're doing Twitter farms, social media campaigns, radical right-wing ideology that isn't even real in most cases. We have the FBI going after people who stormed the Capitol and not focused on national security threats like terrorism. By the way, after talking to some intel guys that I know, it's just a misdemeanor charge. We are focused looking in on the wrong things and not looking out and looking at the right. I am in fear for our future if we continue this trend. And I will do this. I will say this because I'm an advocate for this. This tells me we need to be paying more and more and more attention to ourselves. Stop depending on the system. Stop depending on and being reliant on an infrastructure and focus on you. This homesteading concept, you better get your shit straight. You better learn how to raise chickens. You better learn how much food and water you need to be stored. You need to learn about renewable resources on your land. If you're in an apartment, you better start a one-year plan to get your ass out of that. Whatever it takes, be more self-reliant and cut this umbilical cord. Because in the future, maybe in the near future, which I never thought I would say, it will matter. It will matter. I don't care if you don't, but I know where I'll be. I don't care if you don't, because I know where I will be. And that's taking care of myself and my own, my community first and foremost. If you live in a state that has radical ideology and is likely already screwing this up, like Oregon with outside or outdoor mask mandates, are you serious? 0.2% of kids that get this die. 0.2. Every single thing, car accidents, homicides, suicides, drugs, cardiovascular disease is higher, even in kids, than it is the COVID virus. But what are we doing? Putting masks on our kids. You got Salt Lake City County down the road. Radical mayor who's putting masks on our children, increasing the suicide rate, not paying attention to facts. That's what we're doing. So if they're not going to do it, which they're not, let's not fool ourselves. They're not. If you live in the epicenter of this and you're voting that way, it's because you're dependent on the system, right? Let's not pretend like you're not. If you're stacked in an apartment complex, you're living that city life, you're doing your thing, you're getting the paycheck, you don't care about your job, you don't care about rural America because you think they're crazy, let's be honest, your vote's not changing. You're on your Twitter feed following Sean King, LeBron James, and all these radicals. You don't care. As long as you got your basketball game, your Netflix, you got your Amazon Prime showing up your doorstep, and that government cheese on your plate, you don't care. But I do. So if you want to continue to vote that way, you want to implode your city on itself in LA, San Jose, San Francisco, New York City, Baltimore, Chicago, you do that. You do that. Go ahead and have fun with that. But I'll be taking care of my own. I'll be homesteading. I'll be self-reliant. I don't need you. I don't want to rant because I don't want to virtue signal this, but I won't comply. I'll focus on the legislation and keeping this state sane. I'll focus on supporting the right people. My vote will count where I'm at. I'll look to my sheriff. I'll look to my superintendents, and I'll make sure my community is protected. When my community falls, you know where I'll be? Not conducting acts of violence or advocating for acts of violence. I'll be out in the front steps of my own Capitol Hill with a picket sign, protesting. And I'll accumulate as many possible people as possible. And if they don't get it through that kind of influence, I know the next steps in protecting my own. Displace, secure. I don't need this shit. Neither do you. Being prepared, being self-reliant is the future. And that future, hopefully for you, started yesterday. If not, it starts now. Guys, this will go up tomorrow on the Mike Force podcast. If Instagram and their infinite wisdom allows me to post this, then thank you, Instagram. I'm recording this now. I'll get it up as soon as possible, get it to my editor. We have to stick together. We the people is us. It's me and you. It's not these radicals. It's not the radical professor or the radical legislator. It's not the radical mayor. It's not even the president of the United States. It's me and you. We will get through this together. The people, 80% of this country, are on board. They know what the hell's happening. They see it. If you come from the left, if you come from the right, you're starting to see this unfold. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled. This for them is deliberate. I say incompetence, but it's deliberate. It's very deliberate. Till next time, guys. Have a good day.